Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of Why Didn't They Laugh. I'm recording this in Iowa at a casino hotel, about to perform tonight, and then I'm here all weekend at in Cedar Rapids. So you can tweet me or Facebook me or any of that good stuff. Let me know what's going down. This episode is called Political Agnostic, because I had a really funny text chat with my good pal Josh Wolf, comedian, because every time I start tweeting about the Russian stuff, he usually starts texting me like, how are you not mad that Russia influenced our election? And so we had this big text back and forth, because we respect each other a lot, and I think he thought I like Trump, and it was a big relief off his shoulders when I told him that I'm not a Trump supporter. But what I am is I feel uncomfortable that the media is only giving one side, especially in our profession. Comedians, all they're doing is talking about how Trump is this Russian spy, pretty much. And in my opinion, that's as crazy as like when everyone was calling Obama a Muslim terrorist. Except back then it was in the YouTube comments, and now it's like the New York Times. And we're joking about how they're committing a lot of yellow journalism, literally, because they said he got pissed on. And so then we started chatting about, you know, I'm like, I just don't feel comfortable when no one's giving the other side. And what I want people to realize is unless there's like proof, evidence, you can't call the man treasonous or try to impeach the man, or else that's crazy. Because I think the battle is more cultural than it is political. And that's why I'm a political agnostic, because I don't have a party. I don't know. There's a lot I don't know. I don't even comment on a lot of policies because I'm not an expert at it. I don't know a lot about politics. I don't think very many of us really do. But the things I do know about, I know about. And those things aren't really... The religious equivalent would be my values aren't to one church or even the concept of religion itself. It's just to what I believe. And what I believe in is free speech at all costs. If you don't have free speech, you can't heal, you can't change, you can't grow. And in this in the future, our economy is going to be all about adaptation. You know, the more and more we're going to have automation and programs in Silicon Valley and all this stuff, AI, it's going to be harder and harder to have one job for the rest of your life. So you're going to have to adapt. And it's like that for all aspects of life. And the only way you can adapt is if you can talk and you can listen and you can share ideas and make your own decisions. So that's number one. Number two is due process. That's one of the big problems I have with this Trump smear campaign. You can't get mad at a man because of a government influenced an election. Voter fraud is one thing. If someone went into the voting booths and changed votes, that's treason. If someone influences an election, that's what they do every election. And I was talking to Josh about this. I'm like, dude, Apple has more power than most governments. Like, the whole thing about globalization is nations are basically corporations, and they're going to influence other corporations and bend and twist them and try to affect them as much as they can. The line with democracy is you have to let people choose their vote. And if you set a precedent that it's treasonous for a government to influence an election, then we could never have an election again. And that's the point I'm trying to get to, is when I see people talk about resist and overthrow and fight back and all this stuff about Trump, I'm like, I always try to follow up. And I've had a lot of really good Twitter conversations about this, where I'm like, so what do you want to do? You want to overthrow an elected president in the name of democracy? That's an oxymoron in one sentence. Like, that can't coexist. You can't have a coup. And then this one dude was saying like, oh, kind of like, you know, what Lenin did to the corrupt government in Russia. And I'm like, that violent coup where they killed Tsar Nicholas's family, including children, And he was like, yeah, the people rose up. I'm like, the people was a small group of militants. Like, all the Russian peasants didn't storm the palace. And I don't think you want to start using that as an example, because that communism led to the most amount of deaths in human history, in modern human history, between Stalin to Khrushchev. You're talking 60 million. Then you got Mao. You got another 60 million. That's madness. You don't overthrow an elected government. I didn't want Trump president. I didn't want Hillary president. I think a lot of us were on the same page on that. But the thing is, it's kind of like if you're on a baseball team and the coach's son gets captain because there's a little bit of influence behind the scenes somehow. You don't quit the team. You just start hitting line drives at him. You just do funny jokes. But you don't give up democracy because your side didn't win. And frankly, I'm really disappointed with the left, because I always thought that they were branding themselves as the rational party. And they keep comparing them to Hitler. And it's like, no. Okay, so anyway. Oh, and the third thing is equality of opportunity, not equality of outcome. I think that everyone should have the same right to participate, but you can't change the game based on factors. You know, some people will have an advantage. You can't make the average NBA team 5'8" because that's the national average. Life isn't fair. I think all people, regardless of any background or any category, should have the same opportunity. But that doesn't mean that the end result should reflect your exact population demographics, or else it's called patriarchy, and that just isn't true. It just isn't. So that's what I believe. And most importantly, I think that we shouldn't act like babies. Oh, so anyway, I wanted to also talk about that book, The Secret Life of Pronouns, that I read, and I wanted to share a little knowledge with you. Trump's way of talking is fascinating, and when you compare it to Hillary Clinton or John Kerry or Al Gore or any of these other left-wing politicians, there's some stuff that you see. Leadership positions usually don't use the word I very often. This book is all about these computer programs that crunch an infinite amount of words and breaks up the pronoun usage. And, you know, whether or not couples will stay married, whether or not someone's lying, who is in a power position, who is in a position of status, who is subordinate. They can figure these things out with ridiculous accuracy. It's a lot more accurate than the words themselves, like the meaning words, like depression. Like a poet using the word depression a lot doesn't signify that they're actually sad as a person, but the constant use of I, me, my actually makes people implies that the person's depressed, because too much inward thought leads to depression. It also implies honesty sometimes and subordinate. Trump uses I words all the time. I will do this, I will do that. And you'd think that that was counterintuitive, because he's trying to be alpha dog. And that's why you see Hillary Clinton using we words. We will do this, you this, we this. Actually, alphas use you. But a lot of we, a lot of our, those words. John Kerry did the same thing, because I'm sure they have this team of idiots that they overpay, tell them that that's how leaders talk. But the way this works is a lot different. These things more reveal. They're more revealers. Like, if you change the way you speak, it doesn't change your character. And it doesn't change the way people perceive you. In fact, it has the opposite effect. You start being seen as cold. So what I've noticed is people in positions of actual actual wealth and power and status, probably from birth, the politicians in that position that do well use I a lot. George W. Bush, he was like the guy next door. He's like, I'm just having a good time, man. You know, I'm just, a lot of I's. Because he is elite. He was American royalty. So when he talks like he's an everyman, it helps bridge that gap. Barack Obama, the opposite. He says a lot of we, a lot of our. He doesn't speak with I very often. And that bridged the other gap because he's a man that wasn't from the kind of privilege and prosperity that George W. was. So that helped bridge the gap to make him seem more elevated. But now you have Donald Trump, who uses a lot of I words because it makes him sound like someone you'd hang out with. So like he's submitting in some way. And then Hillary Clinton is using a lot of we words in that, you know, and she's very small stature and she has that high-pitched voice and that the micro expressions of insecurity. And that's the irony, is people like Hillary Clinton use these pronouns to try and sound more alpha out of insecurity, and it's perceived as snobby. If people like that just talked how they probably naturally talk, they would be a lot more likable. Another way that Trump gets to blatantly lie without triggering a lie response is there's a way of talking called performance words. Bill Clinton was a master of it. I'll play a little clip of Bill Clinton here.
But I want to say one thing to the American people. I want you to listen to me. I'm going to say this again. I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky.
So the beginning of that is the performance where he says something like, there's a million ways to do it. I'm going to say again what I've said before. Believe me when I tell you. I will tell you again. Trust me when I tell you. These statements allow the speaker to sound sincere. Like they won't give themselves away because they're not lying. What he's saying is, I'm about to say this thing again, and it's a lie. If you just say, I did not have sex with that woman without the beginning, that's a bigger risk. You know, liars don't usually do that. Usually liars set things up. I just thought that was interesting. Another reason I think Trump touches a lot of people emotionally in America is because he has that unbridled, naive, kind of hateable American optimism that I also share. And I was thinking about why that is. I think a lot of personality traits are inherited. I think that they're genetic. And I've traveled the world quite a bit, and I've noticed something about Americans. We think things are we think we're going to beat the odds. Since everyone's talking about Russia, if you meet Russians, they don't act like they're going to beat the odds. They usually act more fearful, more pessimistic. You know, it's like, the sun may not come out tomorrow. I am prepared. In America, it's like, tomorrow I'm going to own the sun. I just know it. Like, here's an interesting thing about the American black community is because of the slave ships, they have a high rate of high blood pressure and more heart attacks, more strokes, more diabetes. And the reason for this is the people that survived the slave ships were the ones that could retain water very well. Because on the slave ship, they didn't give you enough water. So the people that retained water lived and the normal people died. So it was a mass extinction event that led to, you know, a higher rate of people in America having high blood pressure. Because when you retain water, it's really bad for your heart. Same with diabetes, same with a lot of, only black people have sickle cell anemia because if you're heterogeneous for it, you don't get malaria. You know, I know I've talked about that in the podcast a few times. Okay, now let's talk about who settled America way back in the day. Maniacs. People that were borderline psychotic, full of optimism. People that thought that they were going to win the lottery. You know, 17th, 18th century people. Like, I had some Irish ancestors come here in the 18th century. Prisoners, you know, I had some other people, farmers, some were just all over the map. I'm part everything. But the thing that united all these people was the belief that they could get on a wooden ship facing 20% chance the ship was going to sink. And then they're going to come to a land full of natives and malaria and the unknown, you know, no civilization, and that they were going to do well. Okay, that's a certain type of gene. I think that's one of the reasons why America is so innovative, so artistic, so creative, and also so insane. Because we were the people that thought, it's kind of like me as a comedian. The odds of being a successful comedian, like the odds that I've made enough money as a comedian to support my wife who can stay home with my son and I own my house, those odds are literally one in a million. With a college degree that I had to pay for with money, I started doing open mics and bakeries. That's unheard of. If anyone who crunches the numbers, that's crazy. It's the same with all these startup companies, you know? Bill Gates and Steve Jobs and all these like tycoons of industry that we all look up to here, like the Vanderbilts and the Rockefellers and the Teddy Roosevelt, this little 5'2" guy that went to the Amazon to start punching leopards in the face. You know, these people come from a lineage where it's like, fuck it, I'm going to be the one that lives. And that's a major factor for Americans. And so we will never give up guns. And I don't think we should, to be honest with you. It's part of our culture. I think that the whole, we got to give up guns to end mental illness is not a great argument. And it doesn't really work. You know, someone was just shot today in England. Chicago has some of the worst, has some of the highest, strictest gun laws. And it's has a worse murder rate than like Afghanistan. And as my dad explained it to me once, we're a frontier nation. And my dad's a guy who's never even shot a gun. He's scared of guns. But he's very logical. And he said, you know, the culture of America was westward expansion. The culture of Europe is, they've been there thousands of years. You know, they're still celebrating the Magna Carta. American culture was based on, if you have a gun, you might be able to survive the winter. Maybe. You know, half of you are going to die. But you're going to be really optimistic and you're going to get a gun. So that brings me to the Trump point. So why do people have this instinctive draw towards Trump? Because he's a caricature of American optimism, where he says things that are blatantly, the odds are one in a billion, where he's like, I can beat Trump. I can beat Syria this week. I have a plan. It'll be the best plan ever. Everyone's going to get beaten this week. As much as that sounds insane, it triggers something in American DNA that goes, yeah, man, let's just do that. Let's throw it. Let's do it. And that's part of his support. And that's why that quality of Americans is not going to end. And frankly, I'm not against it. I think it's what makes us kind of unique over here in our weird little land. I am for diversity. I'm for differences. I like when people are different. I like going to Scotland and realizing that someone at any moment could punch me in the face and then invite me to their restaurant. I like going to, England and just knowing that like people are going to be a little more dark in their humor. They're going to be like, today I rode my bicycle in the rain. It was very wet. I love that. I love different people. I love going down south and having people that don't know you at all and they'll invite you in your home. And they don't own a book, but they have this weird DNA intelligence that a lot of my smartest friends don't possess. And then you'll meet the smartest person ever in the shack down the street. Like, I like differences. I don't think we should all be the same. I enjoy not being the same. I've gotten some good emails about, I'll play that at the end. Oh, and I'm definitely, the UK tour is going. I just posted my first link for the London show. We have 8 cities scheduled, but I'm only going to post the links when they go live. So, I just posted one of the London dates. So grab that, on my Twitter or my Facebook. Just check out hashtag Feel My Heat Tour. That's going to be amazing. I can't wait. And I'm taking April off from the road. Going to stay home. I just bought a house to rent out It's beautiful. It's right on a lake. And that's going to take a lot of work and stress, but in the end, it's going to be worth it. Yeah, because that's how I am, too. I'm like, fuck it. I'll just buy a house, see if I can profit from it. If not, we'll just take our wooden boat and go to Antarctica. There's probably some penguins there. So I've been getting a lot of emails about virtual reality, fake news, stuff like that. So I wrote a little something on the plane today to kind of sum up a lot of responses. I did a Periscope response to a lot of emails specifically, but here's a response to just a lot of different stuff that I've been getting. I've been getting stuff about a lot about me moving back to Saranac Lake. Do I miss LA? Why the hell would I do that? Or people are very proud of me for doing that. They respect it. They tell me that they dream about doing the same thing. Josh Wolf told me that today. He's like, I love your pictures you got out, man. He's like, they're beautiful. Your family looks great. And sometimes people will text me like, why the fuck did you leave? Like, are you insane? And I get that from listeners too. And I think a lot of you guys may agree with this or may not. But I love challenging my mind. And I think that the listeners of this show do too. It's kind of like exercise. One of my best friends, Kevin Lillies, is a great trainer. He would always tell me that the best way to build muscle and to build fitness is to confuse your muscles. Like, don't run every day. Don't lift every day. Like, always try new stuff because your muscles can't get used to it and build up immunity to it. That way they keep growing and forming and shaping and sculpting, and your mind's no different. Like, if you just surround yourself by people that agree with you or things you already know, it's safe and it's easy, but it's not, you're not going to grow. And that's kind of what this piece is about. So virtual reality keeps getting talked about. We already live in a virtual reality. Just the process of interpreting what our nose and our eyes and our ears and our mouth says to us, our sensory data, that itself is already a virtual experience. The smell, when we peel a banana, is created by a million years of needing bananas to survive. That smell doesn't really exist. That smell is a virtual signal that lets us know we should eat this thing. And the disgust, the horrible smell of shit comes from a million years of shit killing us. So we live in this virtual world where shit smells terrible. Neither smell is real. Neither smell even exists. But reality operates on a spectrum. A lot of my friends and comedy colleagues were very surprised when I chose to move to Saranac Lake away from Los Angeles. There was no upward career move in it, not even a lateral one. I was surprised, though, how many totally and immediately understood why I did it. And my reason was the need for more reality. I realize I'm saying this into a little glowing square to a bunch of people I'll never see. I have no delusions that I'm not still in virtual reality, but I just needed less of it. Parents tell their kids not to play as many video games because they aren't real, but neither is money. Money isn't real. The pain of watching a $100 bill burn and the pain of dying in a simulation game, they're both virtual. What I experienced in Los Angeles was addiction. It's still in me. When the sitcom I was on for 3 years was canceled, I felt pain and anger and loss. I felt small. And then it occurred to me that my goal when I moved there was to one day have the honor of performing at the Hollywood Improv. Could you imagine? I'm now painted on the mural at the Hollywood Improv, and it still wasn't enough. And I'm a pretty happy guy. I had a realization that nothing would ever be enough. Just like cocaine, I would always be able to feel a success high after a loss, but then I'd get used to it and need more until I felt nothing again. And then the crash, and then the career cocaine. LA is no more virtual than anywhere else. I just realized that it was bad for my shadow world, my shadow self. I still wrestle with jealousies and regrets, but I know it's my shadow self pulling at me. It's not my real self. It's a lot more obvious now that I've gone. When I was a kid, my dad, a few times in a rant, let slip out that he might have been dean if he wasn't held back by family and he could move to where the jobs were. He didn't mean that to be hurtful. He was and is an amazing father, and intention is all we can really judge our parents for. His intention was to express, not to hurt me. But it still hurt. But, oddly, that thorn that he stuck in me, it actually helped. I know he was blinded in that moment from seeing the reality of what he had by his shadow self, the cocaine self, the evermore. He had us. He had his family. He was a full professor, but he still wanted more. Was his family the weight, the hindrance? No, his family was his life. He now realizes that, but at the time he didn't. In love, I've battled addictions. At some points, I've wanted lots of women. Other times, I've wanted no contact at all with any human. I've been addicted to the utopia of the constant new sex or the dystopia of isolation. I've had addiction in my relationship with my wife. When we were first together, I was addicted to the shame of hearing about her other sex partners she had had. I know that sounds weird, but the podcasts are all about honesty. I tried hard sometimes to get her to admit that I wasn't good enough. Admit it, I would want her to tell me that. And she would do the same. She'd try to catch me being tricky or unfaithful so that she could get the rush and then the rage and then the sex. It's funny, gamblers aren't addicted to winning. They're addicted to losing. They're addicted to cortisol. They're addicted to the rage hormone that comes out of their brain when they lose because it's more powerful than endorphins. Think about that. Fortunately for Amy and I, we found our way out. And looking back, that demon, it now just looks like a silly mouse, barely squeaks. I can't believe we were the same people back then as we are now, but without our mistakes, we wouldn't be here. In the constant pleasure of the virtual heightened reality, there are no lessons because there is no resistance, no hard truth, just a constant assertion to more pleasure. In that world, you either become soft or, in my case, addicted to seeking my own shame from someone who actually loved me. I made my own prison walls. If you get too far into the virtual, it's tough to get out. Algorithms aren't designed to be good or bad. They're not designed for growth or truth. They're designed to trigger the next click, to get you to the next level, to get you more pleasure and then more empty and then more pleasure and then more empty. That's all they're for, and they're damn good at it. I longed for the hard truth of winter. Below freezing, you don't seek your own prison. You seek shelter. You seek friendship. You seek family. I long for the wide-eyed amazement of the magic of a garden. Reconnection. I overlook the real magic of the universe. I fill my shopping cart because I had to eat. I'd eat at a restaurant but only care about the drinks, the bill, and then what to tip. To nurture a sprout of kale until it is in a salad is magic. Amy built a giant wooden planter box next to our picture window so we can watch our little plants pull from the sun the energy it needs through the window in below zero temperatures and then become nourishment for us. That's magic. Magic is the woodshed that we converted to a chicken coop. Every day, each chicken gives us one perfect egg. They take table scraps, seeds, worms, leaves from the ground, and they turn it into the perfect, simplest food surrounded by a perfect, hard shell. But it's easy to crack, and we get it every day, even in the cold. Magic is in her womb that gave us our son. Too much virtual, and the sex stops at just the pleasure, many times just by yourself. We don't have the motivation to push forward into the unknown, past the simple magic of orgasm, into the master magic of the life it can create. To my grandfather, if he looked at me right now, I would have the vacant eyes of an addict, even still, even with my chickens, even with my kale. Because I don't know the pride and pain and release of building my own roof, of pulling my family from poverty, of triumph over the lead mine up until I was 80 when the black lung finally took him down in a fight. But not without the fight of living, the fight of the present, the fight of reality. I see people with the dead eyes of addicts because they don't know the real touch of a woman who isn't distracted, or the touch of a man that is proud. The protected world of the virtual doesn't teach the tough lessons like good socks, good purpose, and the smile of your child could save your life. My shadow self dreams of smashing all the phones, burying the apps and the entitlement and the hashtags and the shitty winter hats in the middle of summer and the tight jeans and the fucking smirks, those fucking smirks. I want to bury it in concrete. But that's not the real me. I just spoke this into a phone, and I'm sending this to you on an app, and I'm not strong enough to handle all of reality. I know that. But I knew I needed more of it. I knew I needed to value my shovel again. I know that the stillness of the forest set me free, and I finally can wake up without one word ringing in my brain. More. All right, so that was my little thing I wrote today. I hope you enjoyed it. Definitely something to ponder. You can support this podcast at patreon.com/WDTL. Yeah, anything helps. Oh, we also have a sponsor. I'm going to pull that up. I'm very excited. I'm always so excited by our sponsors. Let's see what we got here. Yeah, become a Patreon. It's almost like being a patron of the arts. Like, you can be a Medici and support Michelangelo, me. There's more power in supporting the arts than actually doing them. I'd feel way cooler if I was actually... And if you have any ideas of any podcast that I should support, I'm down. Because I do believe in tithing, where I want to give 10% of what I make on Patreon to other artists. So if any of you, so far our numbers are pretty low. They're good. I got a solid crew on there. But, you know, the 10% tithe isn't going to change any hearts and minds yet. But that's my goal. And I want you guys to let me know who needs some help. Because I like that. I think that's really cool. So this podcast is sponsored by Blue Apron. And for those of you that follow me on Instagram, I like to Instagram a lot of stuff when me and Amy are making our Blue Apron meals. Because that's awesome. You know, you're cooking together, you're smelling it, you're touching it. You're taking the time to make it taste great. And you bond over it. Blue Apron, like this week, some of the meals you're gonna get, and you're gonna learn how to cook these meals. That's part of the Blue Apron experience. Salmon piccata with orzo and broccoli. Mmm. Pork chops and miso butter with bok choy and marinated apple. Oh yeah, that's a lot of cultures coming together right there. Vegetable chili and baked sweet potato with crispy tortilla strips. Tortilla. Spicy shrimp coconut curry with cabbage and rice. Are you getting horny yet? I'm getting a little horny. Cooking together builds strong family bonds. Research shows the Blue Apron families cook nearly 3 times more often. Yeah, it's also very affordable for very high quality food. It's less than $10 per person per meal. Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients to make it delicious and home cooked. I'm telling you, even if you're solo, forget the family, you'll learn how to cook. So when you have someone over for a date, you can show them exactly how to mince garlic. It's pretty incredible. And it's easy. I mean, it's easy-ish. It's hard enough to get in a flow state, which I appreciate, but you will make something you're very proud of. And it's all 40 minutes or less. But that's a good amount of time. You want to milk it, smell it, you know, feel it in your hands before you just eat it. So check out this menu. Go to blueapron.com/Owen. Use that promo code because you will get 3 free meals with free delivery. You can't go wrong with that. And it also lets them know that you listen to this podcast. And that helps us, helps everybody. So blueapron.com/Owen. That's blueapron.com/Owen because you will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. And thank you all for listening to this podcast. I wanted to clear up my feelings about politics because I know a lot of you feel the same way, where you can, you're a free agent. You can switch teams based on your ethics because you're not really switching teams. Those teams don't matter. You know, if you looked at the Democrats and Republicans in the 60s versus now, they were the opposite. So you don't, nothing, that isn't static. What is static is, what are your values? What do you believe in? And what, which one of these lizards carries that torch better? And it's a very confusing time, and there's a lot of fake news out there, but there always has been fake news. You know, you're telling me Joseph Goebbels didn't have fake news? You're telling me thousands of years ago, if you go to the, if they dig up Rome, there's Roman excavation sites, and so much of the stuff they read was just porn and nonsense, like fake news about the emperor and the family and all this like sex stuff. Nothing's new. So that's why I went back. That's why I needed winter. Because I wanted to get to an area where I didn't have to constantly think the world was ending and I had to readjust everything based on what Huffington Post that morning. Little known fact, you know Andrew Breitbart started Huffington Post? Oopsies. That's a little weird, huh? It's almost like there's more going on here than just the binary black, white, red, blue thing. Uh-oh. Please share this. Please comment on it on iTunes. I'm trying to get more active on SoundCloud as well because I know that's easier for a lot of you guys. And always write to me at whydidn'tthelaugh@gmail.com. And I love you guys. Thanks for listening. You are my connection to media at this point, podcasts. And I love it. And go to hugepianist.com, hugepianist.com for tour dates. Thank you. Oh, and a new coaster is getting made. We just ordered a new burner. You guys are going to dig it. All right, good hang.